Gentlemen, gentlemen, let's get down to business.
Can you dig it?
You dig it?
Can you dig it?
Can you dig it?
Yeah, I can dig it, yeah.
Can you dig it?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Queue. Of course, my name is Mark Glenn, and you are listening to the absolute best podcast and talk show west of the Mississippi River. We are based out of St. Louis, Missouri, the gateway to the west. And on this edition of The Queue, I am joined once again by Anthony Ace Cabral, fresh off the set of Breakout Kings. SOPA, SOPA, is the talk of the internet right now, but it seems that the hackers have already found a way around it, Tony. Any Midwesterner is unhappy with Santa Paws and Disney. Let's find out why. So without any further ado, please welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen, Tony Cabral. What's going on, Tone?
How you doing, Marky Mark?
How's the Breakout Kings treating you, bud?
Good. It's, I've worked on a lot of shows and a lot of things that have, you know, been educational for me in that respect, but this one's a trying challenge.
Now, you're used to working on movies, of course.
Yes.
Primarily.
Mm-hmm.
Dark Knight Rises. You were part of Batman Begins.
I think
you were on Independence Day. That was your first film back in the mid-90s.
No.
None of those? None of those fall into...
None of those.
None
no.
of those at all.
No, prior to this one, the biggest show that I worked on was Up in the Air.
Oh, yeah, with George Clooney, yeah.
With George Clooney. But as much as this is another big set and a big show, it's just that this one moves at such a fast pace because it's a weekly A&E TV show,
right?
And producing, you know, one new episode every 7 days is like shooting a film every 7 days. It's rather tiring. So,
well, what do you know about SOPA? What do you know about SOPA, buddy? Do you know anything about it?
No. What is SOPA?
That is the Safe Online Protection Act. Basically, it's
okay.
It's basically for to stop online piracy.
Okay.
It's the Safe Online Act, or
no,
it's
I didn't hear about this guy who got
the Stop
got
Online Piracy.
Guy who got a year in jail for he downloaded X-Men first, was it X-Men Begins Wolverine or whatever?
Okay.
And then because he downloaded it and then he basically reseeded it, and he was basically a host for it, uploading it. He got himself a year in jail, a year in federal penitentiary. Because he was uploading Wolverine, you know.
Which is a horrible movie.
It's a horrible movie.
It's not like, a great movie by any means. If you're going to get caught on it, you might as well get caught on something decent.
Yeah, a decent movie. But you know, apparently I did hear about the guy recently who got a year in jail because he was uploading via piracy, if you want to say. He was a host and uploading X-Men Wolverine. And I can see how this is. So, I mean, piracy is a big deal these days because... You know, as much as it doesn't seem like we make a lot of money in this industry after a film is produced, you know, those residuals and those monies coming back to the producer that go back to pay the production companies and pay the royalties to actors, whatever else. Yeah, sure. I mean, that's big business. It's big money. And
yeah, definitely. Those guys are, you know, they're putting their heart and souls into some of these projects. And sometimes for years. Multiple years. A guy like James Cameron with Avatar, 10 years. 10 years solid.
Well, sure. And you can make this argument repeatedly on, you know, the really, really big movies like Avatar or Titanic and stuff where people made really big money on the day and people made big money at the box office. Oh, well, they're not. It doesn't matter. They made their money. They're this. They're that. Well, what about those little movies that, you know, only cost maybe $500,000 to $1 million and those producers that are still in the hole to investors and in the hole to... family, friends, acquaintances, whoever, put the money in to let them make the blood, sweat, and tears that is their project, and they're just trying to get another 100,000 DVD sales, and those 100,000 DVD sales won't come because those 100,000 downloads...
have already been downloaded, yeah.
Right, you know, and that's, you know, I think it really affects that indie world more than it does the mainstream industry, but it's all in all, piracy's piracy, and it's still illegal.
Very, very, very true. Well... White male computer nerds have now discovered political injustice, Tony. That's right. And since it's crushing...
Political injustice.
And since it's crushing their dreams of becoming internet billionaires, they're actually doing something about it on a site called I Work for the Internet. It's adorable and depressing all at the same time.
Oh, good Lord.
We Work for the Internet, the site bully declares, we know firsthand that the internet powers the American dream. The internet powers the American dream, Tony? Do you feel that the internet powers our American dreams?
I think that today... Like, and I was thinking about this on the drive over here to the studio. I really like, you know, the age of exploration and the age of industry and everything along the way through American history. I think now, yes, I think today's day and age, the internet is what breeds that American dream, because you can build yourself from nothing, in what is essentially nothing, to have something, to be somebody.
And nothing is more glaring than Rebecca Black and her Friday song to prove this 100%.
Well, but that's proof that you can come out of nowhere using the internet as your launch pad.
Oh, fair enough. Well, this certainly is a development probably related to the collapse of
Friday? What are you talking about?
Oh, yeah, Friday, definitely, man. This is certainly a development probably related to the collapse of the last great toxic ecosystem that powered the American dream, the one involving subprime mortgages, consumer debt scrutinization, and credit default swaps.
Okay.
The American dream is now apparently powered by porn and Facebook and YouTube and Ashley Madison. And this here site, which you are probably going to be reading, or any general site at the moment that you are possibly reading while listening to The Q Show.
Okay.
Which you can always go to theqnow.com if you're on your internet, on the interwebs as we speak. Go to theqnow.com. You can always find out information about the show and past episodes, new episodes, all that good stuff. Toward the end, I Work for the Internet collects the ostensible photos and ostensible names of people who oppose to Stop Online Piracy, a wretched piece of legislation that would create a national blacklist of websites, assemble the list entirely outside the normal channels of due process, and jack up the liability of non-banned websites for the slightest bit of copyright infringement on part of their users. See, this is where we're going. This is where we're going. You know, when something gets moving good in this country, and I don't know what it is, whether it's industrialization back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, you know, or whether it's television and radio in the mid 1950s and 60s, all the way up through movies and now music and all that via the internet. In the 2000s, the 90s and the 2000s, you know, there's always someone there, in my opinion, that is there to just step us down, to knock the people down.
Really quickly, summate what you just read. Is there somebody out there trying to make a blacklist of those people that want to stop piracy? Is that what it is?
Well, basically what it is that Stop Online Piracy Act is a legislation put together by the federal government.
Yes.
They're going to go through and they're going to choose different websites that they feel break certain censorship laws or whatever. Okay.
And they're going to put them on. I'm already mad that you can't play poker online anymore for money.
Right.
Go ahead.
Right. And they're going to block them, you know. And it could be as little as stuff like this, podcasts like this. It could be as little as independent movies or TV shows or whatever. Just because someone says, "Hey, I know that shirt, and that shirt's an American Eagle shirt that you're using in there, and that's a little short film that you did, and because American Eagle owns the rights to that shirt, that person should not be able to put that onto film and whatever without their rights and knowledge and all this." Blah blah blah. Now this website is a group of people, probably hackers, similar to Anonymous and some of the more well-known lucrative individuals on the interwebs.
Hey, hackers were fine when they were just out there to look around and play with stuff. When they're trying to be destructive, it's a bad thing, but go ahead.
Right, and so my point is that they've put together this I Work for the Internet, and they are trying to stop the SOPA legislation from going through. They are trying to basically knock it down in whatever ways that they can.
Okay. So, are they going to reveal who the raiders for the MPAA are? Because that would be wonderful.
I think that they might eventually get there, but let's move on. Maybe I got some more information here for you and the rest of the people out there.
What do you got?
This legislation would curb the rights of everyone online, but on iWork, the pictured opponents are mostly pasty male nerds, often in glasses, the same sort of people who have been activating their asthma inhalers at Tumblr headquarters over SOPA and who are at this very moment contemplating shutting down Wikipedia in protest. Could you imagine if Wikipedia went down for a day? Wikipedia.
Well, I mean, I could because, I mean, Wikipedia, first off, it's funny because everyone goes to Wikipedia to get answers to questions, but everyone makes the joke about if Wikipedia's information is accurate.
Right, which is funny because Wikipedia, and I've had this discussion on the queue before, Wikipedia actually over the last couple of years has like locked down their security pretty solid. Yes, people are still able to make changes to information on sites and things like that, but they're run through like 10 or 12 gatekeepers before that is allowed to stay up online at any one given time. People who have vested interest, whether it be in those specific individuals or characterizations or whatever they're talking about on Wikipedia at the time.
Sure.
So, you know, Wikipedia, yeah, it is very accurate. you know, you'll find out things on Wikipedia very fast.
I think that today in this day and age, Wikipedia's a lot better than what it was.
Oh, dude, they just locked down that John Bon Jovi Wikipedia page, like, boom, like that, immediately when they found out the other day. Did you hear about the John Bon Jovi thing?
People thought he was dead?
Yes. The minute the internet started buzzing that he was dead, they locked it down.
This is the day. I mean, this is the time of year, though, that somebody always has that infamous skiing accident and dies, and it's the death hoax that always goes around.
All right. So here's what
death hoax time it is.
It is death hoax time. Okay, well, let's leave everybody with a little bit of a cliffhanger. What we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break here on the queue.
Okay.
When we come back, we're going to continue to talk about the SOPA thing, as well as we're going to get into this Santa Paws situation. Did you hear about Santa Paws? The movie from Disney, Santa Paws, with the little cute dog?
No.
There's a guy from St. Louis, Missouri that is suing and stating that it was his story.
Really?
So we're going to talk about that when we get back here on The Cue.
You've got your sunrise. You caught a prize. You're mating your Johnson. Party nights, summer whites. You, your friends, and your Johnson. Rooster tails, water trails. You, your kids, and your Johnson. Saturday nights, distant lights. You, your girl, and your Johnson.
You and your Johnson, a way of life for over 50 years.
Welcome back to the queue. Mark Bland, Tony Ace Cabral. We are in the middle of discussing the SOPA, Stop Online Piracy Act. So this legislation would curb the rights of everyone online, but on iWork, which is the website we're talking about, iWork for the internet, the pictured opponents are, like I said, mostly pasty males and stuff like that. And as with, you know, their Tumblr sites, whose $800 million valuation is built on an awful lot of questionable content, there's self-interest at work there. You know, if SOPA passes, it doesn't just censor the internet, it blocks the imaginary road to riches for a great many web geeks who spend their days furiously reloading Hacker News and imagining how awesome their Clojure and Couch DB-powered startups will be and how Fred Wilson and Paul Graham will totally fund it. So, yeah. But, hey, that's fine. It's fine that this site was created by the same guys who made Free Beaver. It's fine that the web geeks and their startups are sat relatively mute as Americans got assassinated by the military without trial, as people were sped from American soil to foreign nations to torture, as people were held in secret CIA prisons for torture for months on end, and thousands of people were evicted from their homes based on unconscionable legal fraud by the big banks, as well as Wall Street, who took nearly $8 trillion in federal commitments while torpedoing meaningful regulation and exerting its influence to avoid meaningful oversight. It's also fine that after people in the Middle East bravely protested repressive dictators and as the American camp out and protest soul-crushing unemployment, government austerity programs, and Wall Street bailouts and get arrested in nearly comical, brutal police crackdowns, that at this moment, Tony, internet nerds choose to have a temper tantrum about the process of shutting down websites. Now, you know, but I want to defend the nerds for a minute. Those are some bad things.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Sure. What were you going to say?
Well, it just, you know, if you're illegally loading, okay, there's a difference between somebody, like you used the example earlier, but like if I made a film that had somebody who happened to be wearing an American Eagle shirt because my wardrobe department knew their job and American Eagle shirt ended up in the movie, I don't think that's what they're talking about, shutting something down, saying, oh, well, that's American Eagle, that's not cleared, whatever else. I think that that would launch, maybe American Eagle should, what?
No, you're fine. No,
maybe American Eagle should come talk to me about whether I got clearance to use their shirt. Because, I mean, if I got clearance to use everything in my movie and you don't believe that it's clear, you can't shut me down. You have to ask me first.
Fair enough.
I think this is more in reference to the fact of if I'm illegally uploading X-Men Wolverine, like that guy who went to jail for a year, sure, shut him down. You know, there's a lot of sites that are illegally pirating music and movies that don't need to be. And I think that, you know, piracy is piracy. Like, if you're illegally, you know, sure, there was the day when, hey, I got this great new album, I want you to have a copy of it, and you're my friend, and I'm going to let you copy it one-to-one in person, whatever else. And, you know, is that piracy or is that me giving a friend a copy and whatever else? And then, of course, that was the Napster argument, that Napster says, oh, I'm doing the same thing, but now my friends are across the internet.
Do you think it's a question, and this is something that just popped into my mind. Do you think it's a question of the fact that it's easier now? Is it a question of maybe these people are kind of up in their britches? Like, okay, people have been like bootlegging VHS tapes when we were growing up in the early 90s, okay? Before DVDs were popular and all that, okay?
This industry's always had illegal bootlegging.
Okay, yeah, but it was a little bit harder to do. You know what I'm saying? You had to get two VCRs that didn't have the color coding problem, you know, where they would just flash it with way weird colors all over the tape, and sure, you're trying to like videotape from one to the other and things like that.
Sure.
CD burners didn't come into their, you know, that's where the real beginnings of piracy in the way that we see it nowadays really came from.
Yeah, technology CD sped burners up, and all of a sudden it became easy. Yeah,
it's CD burners. And do you think that they're all up in the bunches because it can be done so fast, so big, and they can't control it?
I think so.
It was just as big.
Technology caught up to where now you at home, you can copy the movie that you just got from Netflix on DVD onto a DVD that you keep for yourself, and have a copy for yourself. Or if you are of a more, dare I say, frugal mind, and you're attempting to find a way to be, you know, self-financially, you know, challenging, although illegal, and you want to make a million copies and sell them for yourself, sure. I mean, it's illegal to do that, but I mean, technology allowed people to do that. Is it easier to be a technological pirate today than it was 30 years ago? Of course.
Right.
But that still doesn't make it right.
Of course not.
You know, and that's the problem, is that, you know, ethics of whether it's right or wrong have gotten so skewed today because, you know, I mean, it's funny because I think we've had the discussion on not only this show but on previous shows that you and I have been on together.
Right.
About the fact that they say that when you're, you know, the number one audience of like age range to download music illegally,
mm-hmm,
is what, 15 to 25?
Somewhere in that range.
Yeah. And then from 25 to 35, that number drops significantly. And the anomaly that research has shown is that once people were able to have the money to pay for the music themselves, they would.
Right, of course.
And that is the case. I think that also speaks to the fact that there's a matter of ethics in there, that once people kind of get in their mind of, hey, you know something? Maybe I should, you know, pay for this myself.
The right and wrong aspect, yeah.
Right. Is it right or is it wrong? And it's kind of odd that that's one of those elements that's still very gray as people are growing up being teenagers. Because they tell you, oh, well, I learned everything in kindergarten, you know, for the rest of my life. Well, sure, you learn what's right and what's wrong as you're growing up through high school and through grade school and whatever else.
Right.
But that sense of, is it right or wrong to download movies and music legally or illegally, is a big one. And I still think that if you believe it's wrong, like I believe it's wrong to download, you know, everything illegally. So my iPod doesn't have a lot of, you know, music in it because I don't download music illegally.
Right, of course.
It is the fact that, sure, I think that people, they want to do things right as they get older. So they want to pay for it, and they're willing to pay for it. But, you know, there's going to be those people that are always going to be on the far end of that spectrum that are going to be like, oh, well, I'm going to keep downloading stuff for free, and I'm going to keep uploading it around people for free. And yet that is illegal, and you cannot keep that cycle going. And should that be shut down? Of course it should. Much like they should keep storming the little flea markets that sell all those, you know, the old VHS tapes that have all been bootlegged, or bootleg DVDs, and shut those people down. They have crackdowns all over the world for these massive piracy operations, and they try to shut them down because it doesn't help the industry. Like, I mean, especially somebody who's in the industry like I am, in a state like Missouri that just shut its film office down, that wants to get rid of the tax incentive to produce motion pictures and productions here in the state of Missouri, we want to have an industry. We want to show the state, yes, we are a real industry. For our industry to lose a lot of that residual income that we need to have here, sure, of course. I mean, if I had that motion picture out there, and there's a couple that my name is on out there right now, do I want to see those films get pirated? Of course not. I want to know the money's coming back in so that it goes back into the production company so we can produce more projects. So it comes back to me so I can produce more projects so I can keep that cycle going as a producer to keep more content going out there for the audiences. If the money's not coming back, we can't keep productions going, and therefore, you know, the productions get cheaper. You know, they look cheaper, they feel cheaper, they're not as safe, you know, they're not as entertaining, and that's what's not good for the audiences, because you know, the money's not coming back like it should because of piracy. These things, piracy is a huge, huge problem.
All right. On that note, I think we're going to move on, but I think you made a very good point.
Sure.
You know, and I think that there's really not much to say beyond that because
yeah.
it's a very solid point, and I agree with you.
Thank you.
Very much. Speaking of piracy, would you consider someone like Disney taking somebody's script as piracy? Would you consider that a piracy type thing?
Sure. It still falls into that ethics of like, hey, I wrote this script.
Mm-hmm.
And I gave it to somebody to read. This happened to a friend of mine. He had a script that he wrote, but it hadn't been copyrighted and hadn't been registered with the Writers Guild and everything else. He sent it to a bunch of people to get opinions on. And sure enough, about 2 years after I had seen it, about a year and a half, Amy, I happened to watch a trailer for a movie, and I called my friend immediately after I watched it. I go, hey, I think I just saw the trailer for your movie. He goes, what do you mean? I go, I swear, I think I just saw the trailer for your movie. And sure enough, his script basically had gotten produced into a film, and he was kind of SOL because the trick to proving whether you own something, which I know that you're about
it's
to
copyright,
go into,
right?
is it's a chain of ownership, a chain of connection, like a chain of contact, basically. Like, hey, I registered my film, then I gave my copy to Mark Bland, and then Mark Bland gave his copy to the president of Disney. Well, Disney then makes my movie. Hey, how did Disney get my script? Well, they got it, you know, Mark Bland had dealings with them, and I gave it to Mark Bland. Well, here's how Disney got my script. That would be how Disney would lose their lawsuit.
Right.
If there's no chain, if I basically didn't register my film, and it kind of went to like 80 million people that I cannot justify, oh, who did you send it to? Oh, well, I have a small list here of like 1,000 names I sent it to. Well, you can't prove who got what and who sent it to where, and, you know, there's no way to prove that chain of like connection and communication, so you're going to lose.
All right, well, gather around, Tony.
Give it to me.
Gather around the fire, because have you heard the magical Christmas tale of Santa Paws?
No, I have not.
Well, neither have we over here at the Cube. Probably because the little Disney number went straight to DVD.
Okay.
All right?
Sure.
But when two men from St. Louis County came across the Disney film, The Search for Santa Paws, their jaws dropped. Oh, they had heard the story all right. They'd written something quite similar according to their claims filed in federal court the other day. And now they believe Disney has stolen that said script.
Okay.
Dickens would not have come up with a more Scrooge-like scenario, says Clayton attorney Al Watkins, who has made a name for himself in David vs. Goliath copyright cases.
Okay.
Why not just kick the crutch out from under Tiny Tim and sell it on eBay, Tony. Oh, yeah. This story is about ready to kick into high gear. Plaintiffs Ray Harder Jr., Ed Corno, and Richard Kearney knew each other in the 1990s from having worked together at a local advertising firm. Okay. Kearney now lives in Tennessee. They came up with the story Santa Paws, the story of Santa's dog, wherein Santa Claus adopts a misfit dog with huge paws and takes him to the North Pole. But then an evil witch who helpfully named Evila, and it turns out to be Saint Nick's jealous sister, tries to cast an icy spell over the world. So Paws infiltrates her castle, steals her magic icicles, breaks the spell on Santa, and saves the entire holiday. Yes, all of that, and he's a dog, in less than 24 episodes of 24. The authors copyrighted the story in 1991. They asked William Morris Agency to shop it around. By 1996, various entities were showing interest, including Buena Vista Home Entertainment Incorporated, an arm of Disney. But yes, nothing ever came of it, according to Watkins. That is, until 13 years later, when Disney, the same entity that had once expressed interest, released Santa Buddies, The Legend of Santa Paws, in 2009, and the next year, The Search for Santa Paws. According to the federal court complaint, these Disney films included instances of verbatim and nearly verbatim lines of dialogue, screen activity at comparable key plot points, as well as eerily similar use of magical icicle and magical Christmas tree, in addition to the obvious overarching similarity of expressing a story about Santa's new dog who saves Christmas in spite of the best efforts of a domineering and holiday spiritless female antagonist. So, the Riverfront Times,
sounds like these guys are going to win.
Yeah, the Riverfront Times isn't sure exactly how similar the projects are because they haven't seen a DVD and we haven't seen a DVD here at the Q.
Sure.
But, you know, I got some schnapps. I'm waiting to kick in Santa Paws and, you know, take a look and see what we got. You know what I'm saying?
Bust out the gallon of eggnog and let's watch the paws,
Let's watch the paws. Tony, are you in?
I'm in. We can watch the pause.
All right. But the second Disney film isn't an exact replica. It involves a New York City orphanage. It also contains a scene in which a little girl risks her life by climbing into an incinerator, thereby traumatizing various young viewers.
Oh,
if
Lord.
Parents review Amazon's on reviews on Amazon are to be believed.
Okay.
Because they are incinerating young children. Which is better than R. Kelly peeing on your young children on a week-to-week basis. But still.
Didn't go there.
Yeah, you didn't go there. Disney has been informed of the lawsuit, Watkins says, and the investigating of the matter continues to this day.
Okay.
That investigation should have occurred many years ago, the attorney says. How would they have liked it if we stole Tinkerbell? St. Louis might have lost Albert Pujols, but I'll be damned if we are going to lose Santa Paws, Tony.
Well, you know, I mean, it sounds like, you know, these guys, they wrote their original story. It got turned into Santa Buddies, The Legend of Santa Paws. And that was their original film. And then a writer then wrote a sequel, which has the same concepts but new storyline.
Right.
On, you know, in the search for Santa Paws. And it sounds like, I hate to say it, but it sounds like Disney's going to lose. And you know, something that's kind of ironic that I've said about this is, you get these men and women... God forbid if I screw myself here. You know, these men and women who were in their, you know, mid to late 20s or early 30s, and they think they, you know, they've got their master's degree from some university, and they're sitting there behind a desk in a studio making decisions that reflect, you know, that affect us on set, wherever our set might be in the world.
Right.
But at the same time, they're also making decisions based upon projects sitting in a tumbler, and a lot of times going off of some reader's coverage of a script that... came across his desk, and a lot of the men and women now who are making decisions for any studio, not just Buena Vista, but any studio, are probably not the same people that were there 20 years ago. So if these guys copyrighted the film in 1991, like you said, probably got it on the desk of an executives in Hollywood by like 93, I mean, that's going back now almost 20 years.
Oh, yeah.
So the executives at the studio now are different than they were then.
Oh, of course.
So it's very possible that these guys at Disney who
just fell through the net.
Well, not necessarily fell through, but they didn't really realize that this film came from somebody else. Some writer managed to get their hands on the film, rewrite a draft that was so similar, the guy didn't realize how close he'd really written it. And in turn, nobody will ever know. These guys are from St. Louis. Well, beware what you wish for. Like, if you think that you're going to be slick and change a story, and this isn't the first time. When a film does well, somebody always comes up. There was a guy who challenged Titanic. Oh, that was my story. The guy who challenged every major motion picture. Somebody always challenges every major blockbuster at the theaters. But this isn't a major blockbuster at the theaters. This is a DVD that came out. This is not some, like, I grossed $200 million at the box office kind of film. This is... just a little DVD from Disney that these guys are saying, wait a minute, we did copyright the story. We do have a chain of, you know, a chain of authorship. We can prove that we wrote this film. There's so many things connecting it. Like you said, the magical ice crystals, the magical Christmas tree, the female antagonist.
Far-fetched to believe that Christmas would have magical ice crystals and Christmas trees?
Superman has magical crystals in his ice palace, so can Santa Claus.
Yeah, but he never, ever, ever, ever had a Christmas tree in his ice palace. I never saw that. And if, you know...
You know, we'll have to consult with DC Comics on why there was never a Christmas tree in the Solace... The Fortress of Solitude.
Right. A Superman movie, like Superman 2, where he goes and spends multiple minutes of time in the fortress. Had they seen a Christmas tree in there and magical icicles... The only thing missing would have been a dog running across the screen. And if there had been that, do you think these guys would be suing Superman too?
Well, no, but I don't like that. But I think that it sounds like this DVD from Buena Vista Home Entertainment is so close in similarity to their film that these guys have a case. And I think that, you know, Disney's bitten off more than it can chew. And I've heard of so many times these stories get stolen and whatever else, which is why I tell people all the time, be careful who you give your ideas to. Make sure you've got your ideas registered both with the Copyright Office once you've got a screenplay or a treatment written. Make sure you have them registered with the Writers Guild of America so you have a registration number. Please do not ever try to do the poor man's copyright and mail a copy to yourself certified and not open it, because that does not work anymore. Have it registered properly so that you protect yourself. You can protect your creative entity, And by all means, I mean, do your homework. Make sure that you know who you're giving it to. If you're giving it to, you know, an agent to shop around, make sure that things are credible and reputable so that you don't screw yourself into a hole where all of a sudden you're like, oh, hey, that's my movie, but that's my movie.
Do you think you could solve world peace next?
It's possible.
You have the ability, it seems like. So anyway, that's what's...
Yoda.
That is what's going on in the world of Disney now. They are fighting a huge Santa Paws uprising. Yes. So that's coming out of the great state of Missouri, a la St. Louis, where we are based out right now. Also, definitely go to theqnow.com anytime you want to find out more information. We'll have links up and stuff like that. So.
Now, do we have time?
For what? What do we need time for? What?
Well, I didn't know if we had time or not. I saw something the other day that also reflects upon our great state of Missouri and St. Louis.
Okay.
And has to do with the body.
Okay, here's what I want you to do. Hold that thought.
I'll hold that thought.
When we come back from break, we're going to talk about the body here on The Q. We'll be back after this. Gentlemen, welcome back to The Q. Before the break, Tony, you intrigued us with some of the most interesting stuff we've ever heard on this show, really? A.K.A. the body.
Yes.
Explain the body to us, now, because I'd like to know.
Now, we are of a generation when we remember when a lovely woman named Elle McCrae, the cover of Sports Illustrated many times, was dubbed the body here in fashion. And Elle McPherson had an amazing body, as we all knew growing up. And then, of course, that title then shortly thereafter, Elle McPherson transcended to another young lady named Heidi Klum, who was dubbed The Body, if we remember correctly. Yes?
Yep.
Well, the title The Body has now been bestowed upon a new model in today's society, who recently got her wings as a Victoria's Secret angel. And she is from St. Louis, Missouri.
She's from St. Louis.
She's from St. Louis, Missouri. Her name is Carly Kloss, and she is only 19 years old.
She is only 19 years old.
Yes. Maybe 20. I need to look positive. I believe it's just 19.
All right. Yes.
And
she is now deemed the body.
She is the
body. Not Jesse the Body Ventura.
Not Jesse the Body Ventura.
Though, with a name like Jesse, you could be a female and call yourself the Body Ventura.
Yes. Which I've met that body. It's a different body.
Okay, totally different body.
Different body, yes. But no, I mean, Carly is you know, a gorgeous young woman. You know, studied dance here in St. Louis, went to Webster Groves High School here in St. Louis, and as she was discovered at a fashion show here in St. Louis, a charity fashion show here in St. Louis, and ended up getting signed by Elite modeling.
Nice.
And ended up going on to get into fashion, runway, you know, fashion, everything else.
Right.
Well, like I said, she just recently did her first Victoria's Secret spread, got her wings as a Victoria's Secret angel.
And is that a big deal? I don't have a set of wings. Like, if you get a set of wings from Victoria, okay, what do you feel is more honestly important to the world of women who are really skinny, really pretty, potentially whores, and potentially coke addicts, okay? Is it getting your Victoria's Secret's wings, or being one of our buddy over there, Hugh Hefner, one of his three women that he's banging at the time? Which do you think is a higher level of coolness?
I think that there's a distinct difference between being one of Hugh's women and being a Victoria's Secret angel. I think there's a huge difference in the two.
Well, so basically what you're saying is we need to look out for Carly Kloss.
Yes, Carly Kloss, yes.
And she's a hottie.
You know, well, she's got amazingly long legs and long arms.
Really? She's a model?
Yes, yes. My thing is that some people, and I read a lot of reviews on people who saw some of her fashion stuff, whatever else, said that she's rather, especially some of her new photo shoots, she has a very recent photo shoot, very scantily clad photo shoot from Italian Vogue. And it's raised some eyebrows because she looks rather, one phrase actually was Skeletor-esque.
Skeletor-esque.
Yes, because she's rather, looks almost anorexic-like. She's very, very skinny. But here's a very, very tall girl. Very tall girl. And, you know, standing over 6 feet tall.
Nice.
You know, I know you like the tall women.
I'm a tall guy.
I know. Over 6 feet tall, but incredibly skinny, and she fits that, you know, long-legged runway model. And, you know, apparently now St. Louis is home to, you know, Toaster Ravioli's, the Gateway Arch, and The Body.
The Body.
The Body.
Who doesn't love The Body?
Yes.
Let's just be totally honest with each other.
Of course.
So The Axe is falling at HBO, and it just happened today.
At
like,
HBO?
Yeah, like it fell on Ned Stark's head on Game of Thrones. And the network canceled Hung.
Okay.
How to Make It in America and Bored to Death. But don't worry, seven people who watched Enlightened, don't worry, it's coming back for you. You guys are going to get to see the show Enlightened. Yes, Laura Dern, recovery dramedy, will return for a second season. Is this retribution for not renewing The Comeback? Because this is a day late and a good show
short. They could get Entourage on another season, but they kept that show?
Yeah, really, seriously. But it's bad news for all their other 30-minute shows. New York takes a big hit, losing both Bored and America, both filmed in New York, and surprisingly, neither of them in Williamsburg. I personally liked all of them, even though I sort of hate liking America a little bit. You know, it's a decent show, but it's one of those so good, like those what do they call that, you know, those things that are so good but you don't want people to know about it, but they're kind of cheesy, or they're kind of cheesy and shit like that. I can't remember what the word is. I'm sure it'll come to my head. I'm sure people hit me up on the email anyway. Because it was so cliche.
Guilty pleasure?
Yeah, it was a guilty pleasure, exactly. Because it was so cliche and so true and so fun, and I would sleep with every guy on it and girl. Literally, because the show is that good. I'd sleep with everybody on that show. I'd sleep with Turtle on a...
T-M-I.
Too much information. Nice.
Thank you.
The move makes sense for HBO, since the ratings for each show were down, but still respectable, of course. Of all the shows, Enlightened had the smallest audience with about 1.5 on average. That's the one that gets to stay. It's not TV, man. It's HBO. Don't try to understand it. It's like a Jeep thing. You know what I'm saying?
A Jeep thing?
Do you have any shows right now currently that you're just like super geeked about, like the your favorite shows on TV?
Well, right before I went down to Baton Rouge to go work on Breakout Kings, I happened to learn...
You're working on what show again? What is that? Breakout Kings? What is that?
There? On A&E.
AceFilms.com. Go check out AceFilms.com. You can find out everything you need to about Tony Cabral at AceFilms.com.
No, it's on A&E, and the second season should start in March.
Shameless
plug for the show that I'm working on. No, I love Lie to Me, and when Fox 86 Lie to Me, that was a hard blow because I didn't see that as like
that's the one with the one actor that's kind of weird.
Tim Roth,
yeah.
Tim Roth's not weird. Tim Roth's amazing.
No, he's kind of an odd actor. You know what I'm saying? A little off kilter type guy.
But the show was about a guy who was a deception expert, and his army of deception experts at his company. Who solved, you know, crimes and mysteries and you know, thriller and everything else. It was a great show. And I love the way they did it. It wasn't like, oh, well, we'll use forensic science, like 80 million CSIs. No offense to CSI, but I'm saying, like, it was they used this other method of actually catching whether somebody was being dishonest or not. Well,
I always like numbers. That was kind of unique.
Kind of unique like that, too. Yeah. Numbers was using the numerology factor. But, like, Lie to Me, I didn't realize, got canceled shortly after their spring season. And I love that show. I don't know why they canceled Lie to Me, but they did. That was one of my guilty pleasures. As of now, my guilty pleasures all kind of fall onto the iNetwork. Of course, I love The Big Bang Theory with my future wife, Kaylee Cuoco. And then, all the comedies on Monday nights as well.
Okay, let's talk about The Big Bang Theory.
Oh, Lord.
First off, number one, it's not funny.
It is funny.
It is.
I love The Big Bang. It's hysterical.
Dude, it is completely not funny.
It is funny.
No, The Big Bang Theory...
For those of us who live in that geekdom of a universe, that is our wet dream, to have the gorgeous blonde next door. who's willing to hang out with us, even though she does not understand what the hell we're talking about.
Dude, the Big Bang Theory is so stupid. The best
thing is not stupid.
It's
well, I Chuck Lorre, I did not say your show was stupid. He said your show was stupid.
It is stupid. Thank and I'm Chuck sorry, Lorre, here's the thing. Here's the thing. Okay, it's what they should have done when Revenge of the Nerds came out in the early 80s. They should have just capitalized off it then and created the Big Bang Theory. Why wait till now? I don't because, think there's that cash. Because
now the geek factor is so much more chic factor.
But I don't think it's as well written as How I Met Your Mother.
No, How I Met Your Mother is a great show also.
I don't think it's as well written as How I Met Your Mother or Friends or some of those other classic shows.
How I Met
shows.
Your Mother has been on for quite a few seasons now. Is you know, I think that it needs to quickly come, like, they keep hitting on that point that they've teased finding his mother so many times. You know, How I Met Your Mother. So many times he's almost found his wife, and his wife's been there, or that's led to, like, she's been in that apartment, she's been in the room.
Do you think it's going to end up being, what's his name, his brother's wife? The chick who was from Band Camp in the American Pie movies?
What?
How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
It stars the girl from American Pie who was in Band Camp.
Yeah.
Okay, I can't remember her name off the top of my head. The redhead.
Yeah.
What if it's her?
But no, because she's married to somebody else.
But that's my point. Like, that's the whole kicker in the end. Like, they had one night of drunken stupidness.
They constantly make reference to the fact, I know it's not her. But, I mean, I think that How I Met Your Mother needs to begin, even if it takes a two-season, three-season quick, they need to begin to introduce, like, who their mother really is and, like, begin that concept.
Do you think because that the show loses its credibility at that point? Do you think it's going to go downstairs?
I think that if they were smart, they would make sure they don't jump the shark and that they would keep it going to a point where they wrap it out in a happy ending.
I really don't think they're going to put Henry Winkler in a leather jacket and make him jump a shark tank anytime soon on this show.
But, like, you know, all shows have that point where they jump the shark. Now, Big Bang Theory is funny because, like I said, that acceptance of the geek factor is a lot more acceptable nowadays than what it was. And in playing off that and playing off of that concept of, I mean, Freaks and Geeks was a great show when it aired. And it was on for such a short run of time, but a lot of people who were part of the Freaks and Geeks generation, that's what, you know, when we were on the side of the Freaks and the Geeks, we didn't, like, there was nothing for us. And now there is a show for us to laugh at and have fun with. And
but I didn't think Freaks and Geeks was all that great either. I thought, you know, that was one of those lost MTV generation shows, like My So-Called Life and all that.
But for what it was, though, it was good for what it was, but it didn't get enough of an audience fast enough.
I wonder if Parker Lewis ever lost. Do you think he ever lost?
I think he did. Apparently, because his show's not on the air anymore. but Chuck Lorre, I think, hit it really hard. And he's got this great comedy that plays off of the geekdom and allowing the geeks to play with things.
The geeks shall inherit the earth.
Kind of, yeah. You know, but it plays off what every geek kind of wants. That, you know, every geek wants the gorgeous girl.
But,
like, this geek, I want that girl, you know.
I think my biggest problem in general with anything that's on CBS...
I would have Kelly Cuoco.
...is the fact that a lot of CBS shows...
Sure.
...come out of nowhere and are extremely popular, like Ray Romano's show, Everybody Loves Raymond.
Sure.
And no one understands why. No one... There's no, like, net... Like, okay...
No, I can totally tell you why.
I can tell you why
all these shows are so
I can see why Roseanne was popular. I can see why Night Court was popular. I can see why Cheers was popular. Friends was popular. I can see where a lot of these shows get their popularity from.
Sure.
Everybody Loves Raymond. Don't see where the popularity comes out.
Sure.
I don't see where it comes in on a show like My So-Called Life. I don't see where it comes in out of nowhere on a show like Big Bang Theory. I just don't it doesn't seem like there's enough there.
I think that a show like Everybody Loves Raymond, there was enough of that at the time when Everybody Loves Raymond was on, of that dysfunctional family that was dysfunctional in a different way than Roseanne. There was dysfunctional in the fact of, hey, here's a couple that's together, they've got the crazy in-laws, they've got the crazy brother. You know, and the dichotomy of how.
But they had Seinfeld that had the same thing: the crazy in-law, not in-laws.
Seinfeld
but.
Was a completely different monster of a group of friends in New York that had their different mismatched adventures every day, thanks to Larry David.
Right, they were sketches.
Yes, and each show was its own sketch, and that was different than what Everybody Loves Raymond was. Everybody Loves Raymond followed this family in this modern dysfunctionality.
Okay. Do you like a show that is super simple, stupid, funny, half-hour sitcom comedy type show? Or do you prefer a show like A Sons of Anarchy, something that is like an hour-long drama that tends to have a piece-to-piece that like goes from story to story? Like Breakout Kings. Well, yeah. Like every... Well, okay. Breakout Kings is kind of weird because it's not like Sons of Anarchy. It's not like The Shield. It's not like a lot of the... it's more like House and CSI.
Sure.
It does have an underlying plot along... that a general plot along the underlying current throughout the entire season that they're following along.
Sure.
You know, a small piece here and there. But each show is kind of self-contained as we're going after this guy. We're going after this guy.
Oh, for Breakout Kings, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Whereas Prison Break, Sons of Anarchy, it was like each show led to a new piece of the story. And the only time they didn't even... you couldn't literally watch show 5 without watching shows 1 through 4 because there would be a lot missing for
you. Now, here's the difference, though. And we've been doing that... I mean, I can obviously not talk about what is going on in season 2 of Breakout Kings. But... there is a lot more. There's more threads in season 2 that really... there was threads in season 1 of Breakout Kings that did that same concept, that kept this ongoing thread through all of season 1. And it's going to continue in season 2. And there's more in depth.
Do I get more teabag? Can you just tell me that? Is there more teabag?
I cannot talk about what...
you can't tell me if teabag just makes an appearance?
I cannot talk about what happened.
I didn't say when. I didn't say which show.
I would love to, but I can't.
Teabag comes back.
I cannot talk
about what... here's what I want you to do. Just give me a wink.
I cannot talk about what happens.
You give me a wink. That's all I want.
I cannot talk what happens.
I won't tell anybody what the wink is.
No, anyway, the show, you're right.
You winked. Good job. Teabag's coming back on season 2, guys. It's fantastic.
I'm not telling you anything. They catch a new convict every episode. That is true. But at the same token, there is the underlying stories that hold in. And I think that a show like a Breakout Kings is better like that because it has the underlying story that has to wrap from episode to episode, but they still manage to have that episode story. And it's engaging that way. But do I like the comedy half-hour sitcom versus, you know, an hour-long drama like that? Well, I like them both. I do watch my good dozen or so of the hour-long dramas and stuff like that, which, oddly, prior to getting the phone call... and this is dead honest, before I ever got the phone call, I watched Breakout Kings. And I did watch the whole first season of Breakout Kings prior to ever getting offered to work on the show.
I think I'm going to have to stop this conversation before you slap your foot and shoe completely off of your body that you've smacked it so many times.
I get antsy.
I understand. Okay.
But I like both of them, and I think that they both serve a purpose. Can I watch the half-hour comedy, get it out of my system, laugh a little bit?
If it's funny. If it's not Everybody Loves Raymond, of course.
Well, but
if it's not The Big Bang Theory, that's
great. I do watch Big Bang Theory, and thank you, Chuck Lorre, for making shows like that.
You do laugh at that.
I do laugh at that.
I can't believe now, that you do.
There is those days when I'll sit back with a big bag of popcorn or a pizza, and I'll watch like 4 episodes on my DVR.
Big bags of popcorn and 3 pizzas.
And watch 4 episodes of my hour-long drama all together, you know, in a big marathon. I'll do both. So it just kind of depends on what I'm in the mood for. I do watch both. I watch comedies and I watch hour-longs.
All right, fair enough. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break here on the show. When we come back...
And I will not answer any of his Breakout Kings questions.
We are going to do some listener emails. It's become quite a popular little stitch here on the radio.
Sure.
On the show.
Okay.
On the thingamajigger that we do here. The topsy-twirly-thirly thing.
I'm going to go find out where my movie's
going. The twirly-twirly-twirly thing.
I learned that my film's airing on TV, and I'm going to go find
out. I don't care. What was the name of the film? Go ahead.
Holiday
Cheap
Baggage.
Cheap plug
for Holiday Baggage right now.
Lifetime Network?
I believe it's on Lifetime.
It's where they watch it. Of course, when you're listening to this show, it's going to be not on at all. We'll be after Christmas.
I'm sure it'll air. It's a Christmas movie, and
right.
The Lifetime Movie Network does air those things.
Well, I hope you guys
in the movie.
I hope you have the ability to answer people's questions because it has become quite the little thing. And by the way, also, ladies and gentlemen, you can catch The Cue every single week on Stitcher Radio for your iPhone and Android phones. That's right. Go to Stitcher.com or go onto the apps market on your respective phone, whether that's iPhone or Android,
yes.
And you can download the app and listen to The Cue Show every single week.
Is the app free?
It is a free app.
It is a free app.
Free app. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with listener emails.
Sometimes something beautiful happens in this world. You don't know how to express yourself, so you just got to sing.
I just have to.
Let's go.
Welcome back to the queue, Mark Bland, Ace Cabral.
Hello.
That's not Ace as in Adam Carolla. You're the other Ace. You're Ace Cabral.
I'm in no way, shape, or form part of or competing with Adam Carolla Entertainment. I am Anthony Cabral, yes.
By the way, before we get into these listener emails, which is what we're getting ready to knock out here in just a few seconds.
Knock it out.
Two things I want to know from you.
Yes.
One.
I'm single.
You are single.
And a Virgo.
And you love girls.
Yes, I do.
Yes, you do. Dark Knight Rises trailer. Have you seen it?
You know, I actually have not seen the newest trailer, no.
You have not seen the Dark Knight trailer.
Oh, wait, no. Wait.
Dark Knight Rises with Bane and Anne Hathaway.
Have I? I think I saw it once, but it's been a while. I can't remember. No, I have to say no.
Have you seen pictures of Superman?
Yes.
And what do you think?
I think that he looks like Superman.
You think that he looks like Superman?
However, it's funny that we can't have an American play James Bond, but we have British people playing all of our superheroes.
Yes, we do. Not Spider-Man. Well, yes. Yeah, Spider-Man. I'm sorry. No.
Spider-Man, Superman.
Do you think that Superman has small arms? Do you think he's got tiny, like, little wingy arms?
You know, somebody else had the same discussion with me, and I think that he's got normal-sized arms. I think that bad photography makes it look like he has midget arms.
That's what I said. And I just, like, someone else had this conversation with me about Superman having, like, little, like, pterodactyl arms or something like that. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, no, I think it's the view of, like, the photography or whatever. Yes. You know, I don't think it's necessarily that Superman has pterodactyl arms or T-Rex arms.
Yes.
He's not swinging at people going, rah, rah, and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah. No. Okay. We just had Christmas. We just had Christmas. Yes. It was a beautiful, beautiful holiday. What's your most memorable Christmas, between Christmas and New Year's? You know what I'm saying? That time period. That's where we're at right now. We're in that time period of the holidays. Christmas, New Year's Eve, and all that. What's your most memorable holiday memory that you have from the past?
My what?
Most memorable holiday
memory?
Put the phone down.
I'm trying to tell the world that I'm on your friggin' radio show. Shut up.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
What do you mean?
I just asked you a very
simple
question.
Every time I end up at holidays, I always end up single and alone. I don't have any good holiday memories.
Mine was getting a big wheel when I was 7. Way to go. Way to bring that one to...
Ruin your world by destroying your big wheel.
All right, that's it. We're moving on to these listener emails.
I don't really have any good holiday. I mean, I guess, I don't know. I mean, I'm thankful that I still have, you know, my family here, and I'm glad when my brother's able to come in town and stuff like that. And, you know, last Thanksgiving, my grandfather passed away, so thanks for bringing that up in memory.
That's what I was gunning for. I was like, man, I can't wait to
gunning
wait till
for the fact that, you know, you're
45 minutes into the show.
Memories.
Yes.
Mark
okay.
Bland.
Let's knock out these listener emails because this has become quite popular. It's time for listener emails where you guys respond to all of my wonderful questions as well as just send me your problems that you're having in life. You can always hit us up, mailtheqshow@gmail.com. That's mailtheqshow@gmail.com. And you can always get a hold of us there.
Yes. Email away your questions and I'll be sure to come back on the show and annoy Mark with more of my politically correct messages.
Well, here comes the first one, Tony. Mark, love the show, and look forward to hearing your guys' opinion on this issue I am now having with my mother. She has decided to start only interacting with me and other family members through her cat. We don't know why, but she puts on the fake voice and talks to us through her cat. Should we contact someone or just see if it passes? It's been going on for a couple of weeks now, and she is 54 years old. Thanks again, Bill from South St. Louis.
Wait. She interacts
with the family members.
With the family,
similar to the movie,
like
The Gopher.
To a puppet,
The Gopher. Yeah, like similar to that. Is that The Gopher? What was the name of the movie with Mel Gibson where he talks with the puppet?
Oh God, yes.
It just came out this year.
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about. The hamster, the puppet, the gopher, whatever. Doesn't matter. Yes, she uses the cat and she goes, "Hi, Mr. Ace Cabral. I want to be your friend." You know, type things. Kind of weird, huh?
Really?
Like, yeah.
Through the cat?
Yes.
I mean, I can see, like, I mean, what do you do when you're sitting at the dinner table and, like, no, guys,
Mr. Peaches, will you please tell everyone to stop eating all of my cornbread stuffing?
What is that? The real question is should they contact someone or see if it passes? I think in this case, you have to give it a little bit longer than a few weeks. I would say, you know, give it a month or two. If at the end of 2 months, she's still using the cat as something of a verbatim to, like, you know, like speak through some type of a channel for her to discuss things.
But when your whole family's there, don't talk through the cat.
She's just sitting there with a cat in her hand, and she's like, "Hi, everybody! Open your Christmas gifts." God, that is just horrible. I would say, see if it passes. Then, if it doesn't happen after about a 2 month period, why don't you guys go ahead and contact somebody? That might be a really good idea. Now, with that being stated, hey, the Q, try this one on for size. Okay. I live in Boston, Mass. And we had designated biking.
Respectable, of course, of all the shows.
What?
I don't know what's going on there, but it doesn't really matter. Hey, the Q, try this one on for size. Sure. I live in Boston, Massachusetts, and we have we has designated biking and walking areas on busy streets.
Uh-huh.
I was walking my husky when I saw a cat, and when she saw a cat and bolted towards it. Okay. I couldn't let go of the leash because my hand was tangled up. Forced to run along, I ran into a parked van at full sprint. I lost my dog, broke two ribs, and have to pay for the dent in the van. Problem being that I was walking/running. I was in the walking/running street lane. The truck was illegally parked in the walking lane.
Okay.
Should I be responsible for that? No, I don't think you should be responsible for that. So you're walking your dog along. They have a designated walking/running lane.
Yes.
That they use or biking lane in some cities where sure. It's right alongside the edges of where the cars drive. You got someone parked in the middle of that lane. You're running along. Your dog takes off. You're trying to keep up with it. You don't see what's going on. Everything's going chaos. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And you run into the back of this van, head first, whatever. You put a dent into the van, and now they expect you to pay for it. Bullshit. They were parked illegally in a place they shouldn't have been parked.
I agree.
I don't think that there's a reason why you should have to pay for that.
Well, no, I think that you're right. Well, I think, you know, well, it's the same kind of thing that, like, if you happen to, like, cross a road jaywalking and you get hit, it's the driver's fault for hitting you, because the car is a bigger target than the person.
Right.
I think in the same respect, sure, I think that, you know, if the guy parked illegally there and the guy's dog got away from him and he ran into the car and did damage to the car... I think it's the car's fault for being illegally parked in what is designated as a, you know, running lane. Yeah, I think that it's the car's fault.
All right, well, it's almost time for us to get out of here. We got we got one more, man.
One more tweet cast.
Hey, the show where the guy sings Jar of Hearts had me laughing all day at work a few weeks back. I don't know if you were here, Tony, but you can go back and listen to that episode of The Q. It was the first time we went back into listener emails for the first time in months.
Okay.
And there was a guy.
Yeah.
You know the song Jar of Hearts?
Jar of Hearts?
Yes.
Who sings?
Singing these Jar of Hearts, blah, 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 blah. It's a real slow melodic song. Anyway, 7 o'clock in the morning, this guy's in a carpool. The guy's girlfriend breaks up with him who drives the carpool, and it's just him and that guy in the car at 7 o'clock in the morning. The song comes on. This dude starts visibly weeping and screaming the song Jar of Hearts at the top of his lungs while this other guy... Hilarious. You have to go back and listen to the episode we had Andy Eckel on. It was great.
Oh, good Lord.
So anyway, Jar of Hearts had me laughing all day at work weeks back. I decided to write in a problem and see where it takes me.
Okay.
I love my boyfriend, but he is in Afghanistan, not coming home like the Iraqi veterans for Christmas.
Sad.
When we talked via Skype the other day, I asked and said I was bored and there was nothing to do while he is gone.
Okay.
He turned that around and said that he had some ideas and they were sit-ups and working out. I was pissed, and he shrugged his shoulders. Needless to say, we hung up rather abruptly after that. Now, I think he doesn't like me, and I know he was serious based off the way he presented it, and I think I should break up with him. What do you think?
Okay. Wait, hold on. So, yeah. What's this girl's name?
Their name was not given.
Okay.
And I'm not going to give her email address.
So, Miss Jane Doe.
Miss Jane Doe.
Miss Jane Doe with your Afghani military boyfriend. Now, mind you, you know, I do give mad props to all the men and women who are serving overseas. Thankfully, you know, we're pulling out of Iraq, and a lot of those men and women are coming home. Sadly, in Afghanistan, a country that we have no business being in, we still have men and women there fighting and dying for their country. And for their country.
Yes, of course.
But
the anomaly is that, like, if you're Skyping with your boyfriend and you're like, well, I'm kind of bored, what should I do? And he tells you, honey, do some damn sit-ups and get yourself in shape, you fat cow. I mean, I'd be like, just well, go suck bring another your guy's lazy pee-pee? Ass home and, like, do something, you know? Like, I mean, yeah, no offense, it's kind of rude. I mean, I understand that he's over there, you know, getting shot at and all that, but that doesn't mean that he has the right to try to be like, hey, you're a fat cow, you lazy bitch, get up there and do something. I mean, it's still, like... It's kind of it's mean. It's degrading. I mean,
it's kind of funny, actually. I mean, it's going to be honest with you. If you are a fat girl, and I'm not trying to word it in a negative way, but if you are a large girl, he shouldn't be like ramming you like that out of nowhere on a Skype thing from Afghanistan.
If you're his girlfriend,
yeah, exactly.
You've been together for a while. He should have more respect than to be like, get off your lazy ass, bitch.
Yeah,
you know, he should be like, honey, I love you. You know, I can't wait to see you. You know.
I'm over here with walking spiders.
Well, no, but here's what you do.
Camel spiders.
But see, here's what you do. I mean, this is how you do. You're like, you know, honey, you better get your endurance up because when I come home, you got to keep up with me. Come on, you know, make sure that, you know, we got to get all ready to go because, you know, you got to be, you know, it's going to be a lot of makeup time when I get home.
I'd really like to know.
There's other ways to say get your ass in shape than saying, bitch, do sit-ups.
Just off of that alone right there, I would like to know what the over-under is on a guy's first time when they get back after 4 or 5 years of tour duty in Iraq or Afghanistan with their girlfriend. Like, what the over? Is it, like, under 2 minutes? Is it under one? Is there a record? It's 4.5 minutes. The guy went and everybody was like, oh, my God, you went 4.5 minutes. Like,
what, for time and sex?
Yeah.
I think that that's a question we don't need to have a discussion on. But I think...
I didn't ask you what your time
is. What we're talking about here is whether or not you should tell her via Skype, bitch, you're fat, do some sit-ups, which is not cool. Like, it's just not cool. There's other... Right. If you want your significant other to work out, because maybe they've gotten rather comfortable...
Right.
There's other ways to encourage said fact than saying, bitch, do sit-ups.
All right, fair enough.
You know, do I think that it was the right thing for her to do to hang up and be like, what the fuck
do
was
we
that?
Think she should break up with him? Yes or no?
I would say it was a little abrupt. I think it's possible that they better have a long discussion when he gets back.
I think that you're right. I think it's a discussion type thing. And if at the end of that discussion, it just seems like he keeps hammering on the fact that you're overweight, then I think it's time to move on.
Because but here's,
they gotta love you
but
for
see,
you.
See, here's the lick, though.
That's why Tony can't find nobody, because no one loves him for him.
I'm single. You can call me. Now, here's the thing. This is what you do, though, is that if you choose to break up with him while he's still in Afghanistan, you immediately need to get on the number one fast track with a personal trainer, and you need to make yourself like the body, like, you know, not as skinny as Karlie Kloss, but like you need to make yourself rock solid, like built like a, you know, like anything
just
else
to prove him wrong.
To prove his ass. So when he comes home, you're like, oh hey, too bad, so sad. Look at what you could have had.
And I'm with 9-inch Johnson over here.
Yeah.
Got it. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for us to get out of here on The Cue. I want to thank Tony Cabral.
Thank you
so much, Tony. Tony, you got a website anybody can go to? Check out information
on you. You can always check out acefilms.com, find out a little bit more about me. Of course, there's the Twitter cast, and I'm sure that Marky Mark will put a link up to my Twitter feed because I like to tell the world what I'm doing.
All right. Always visit thecuenow.com. That's www.thecuenow.com for the latest episodes and information about The Cue.
Now.
If you have any questions, you can hit us up at mailtheqshow@gmail.com and through social media on the Twitter through @theqcast, or you can find our Facebook page. And it's also been a fantastic 2011. Thank you all for listening, and I'm looking forward to making 2012 even better.
Yes.
Happy New Year, and God bless this scary country. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Mark Bland, and on behalf of Tony Cabral,
I'm Tony Cabral.
Thank you very much for listening to The Cue. We'll see you guys next time on the show. Word to the brown James, he's some chicken chow mane, really mane. You done say the silly things and the Bella Dana Dane. Why you cuffed and claim the name? Hey, my main thing, got my last name, yada da, da, mane.